Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com, SB Nation's Toronto Raptors community. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, the driver of the T-Ross-mobile, and I'm joined by, first up, it's Russell Peddle. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. I'm very happy to be back. It's been a while.
Yeah, we're happy to have you back on, and also joined by Harsh Devay. How are you?
Dude, how's it going, man?
It's excellent. Terrence Ross is back. He's going to be sixth man of the year, or at least starting now, I guess, so he'll just be an all-star. So... That's fun. It's a lot of stuff going on with the Raptors right now, though. Like, there's lots of injuries. The depth is an issue. The starts are terrible. And they just had, like, an amazing game against the Warriors that we'll get into in our segment, in our first segment. We're also going to talk today about Kyle Lowry and how he is over everything. And obviously Terrence Ross. We're going to talk about Kobe Bryant and his farewell tour. Going to get into a little bit of injury talk, depth talk, and then sort of a look ahead to the Spurs on Wednesday, some Bebe talk. There was a lot to happen this week. This was a packed week. But first off, a little thing came up today via Twitter, Harsh's Twitter, asking what chicken wings taste like.
Yeah.
Because, Harsh, you're a vegetarian. You've never eaten chicken wings. Have you ever eaten any meat before?
I ate meat once by mistake.
And, okay, what kind of meat was it?
Okay, so somebody brought, like, it was like a potluck or something at my place, and somebody brought meat by mistake to our place.
Okay.
And the person didn't realize there was meat inside, and I think it was, like, goat meat.
Okay.
But it was cold. So my one time eating meat wasn't even enjoyable, so, yeah.
That doesn't sound great.
No, it was really shitty.
But, like, your question was, like, what do chicken wings taste like?
Yeah, man, because you guys, all you meat eaters, talk about chicken wings like it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Better than sliced bread, let's be honest.
Probably better than sliced bread.
Sliced bread, it doesn't
By the way, why is that a saying? Why is that a saying? Sliced bread isn't even that great.
I think the concept of slicing your bread beforehand is great, but the taste of it is just mundane.
Yeah. Anyway, chicken wings sound like they're really good, but it's like nothing can taste as good as you guys make chicken wings sound.
Well, see, the thing with chicken wings is, like, they all sort of taste different because you just get different sauces and stuff, right? Like, they can taste kind of however you want. Like, if you go to Wild Wing, they have, like, 100 and something different flavors you can get. You can get, like, chocolate raspberry wings, but, like, I don't know. The thing for me is, like, I like wings too, but they're not my favorite. Like, they're tough to eat, and, like, if you get bad ones, they're not very good at all. So you need, like, you know, you need to have high quality wings for them to be good, at least in my opinion. What about you, Russell? Are you a big wing guy?
I'm a huge wing guy. Like, it's funny that this ended up being a topic of conversation tonight, because you'll never find a bigger wing guy than me, quite honestly. So I was just blown away by the idea that someone had not eaten a chicken wing, because to me, that's like, you know, I can't even describe that. I can't even come up with words to describe that. There's so much that goes into a good chicken wing too, like the batter to meat ratio, the type of sauce, like how spicy it is, the balance of sweet and spicy, and yeah, man, I feel like I have so much to show you, Harsh. It's if only.
I've seen people enjoy wings. Like, you know, I'm usually there as a bystander, as a third person watching people enjoy wings. It's like walking in on somebody's, like, sexual experience.
Kind of is a sexual experience.
It really is. Like, they're just like a mess. Okay, I don't want to get into it, but, you know,
just napkins everywhere.
It's just like, it's just too, a total just, mess.
I think too, as a sports fan, it's just
stains kind of everywhere. Sorry, I'll stop.
It's kind of associated with that, though. Like, you know how you have your meals and you're like, you like turkey on Thanksgiving because it's related with Thanksgiving and all that stuff. And like, you don't, because you don't eat meat, but but, you know, for me, like, eating wings is that association with, like, going out with the guys and watching, like, a game and eating wings and drinking beer. And it's just, like, it kind of all goes together. So
you're so cliche and basic.
Yeah, okay, so
basic,
what?
White man.
Yeah, essentially.
No, I'm like, are you a hot wing guy? Do you like a nice sweet chili?
No, I like buffalo wings, hot wings, yeah.
Okay, I'm on the hot side too, although, like, I draw the line at, like, hot dry rubs.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, no, dry rubs are, I like them nice and saucy, very battered.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite wing place?
I really liked Don Cherry's in Newfoundland, which is, I don't know if that's, like, as if there's as many of those around the other parts of Canada, I think they're...
There's one like a 5-minute walk from my house.
Well, there you go. Their wings are fantastic.
It used to be. It closed down.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's a sushi place now, but yeah.
Okay.
I've definitely eaten my fair share of wings at a Don Cherry's.
You guys are like speaking Hebrew to me right now.
But most of my favorite places are like little hole-in-the-wall places. Like,
yeah. Shout out to the Griffin Pub in Whitby, Ontario. This is where we used to go for like 15-cent wing night on Mondays when we were in high school and in summers between university. That was the place.
The last thing I got to say about wings. Wings is the type of meal you can get like, it's one of the only meals you can get, and I'm sorry about this, Harsh, because you don't eat meat, but it's like, it's that one where you don't have to pretend to want to eat other stuff. Like, you don't have to eat sides, you don't have to eat any vegetables or salads. You can literally just eat as many wings as you can until you're full. So you're just basically eating meat the whole time, which yeah, is something like, I really like about that, because you're not messed around with like fries and filling up on. I mean, unless you're eating the carrot sticks and the cucumbers, but I mean, who really does? Or
I sometimes dabble, but yeah, typically it's just straight wings. There was like, we used to go, and like a girl we used to go with for wings, she would always get like wings with fries on the side, and I always thought that was really bizarre. But it's like the only meal where you can just have straight wing, like straight meat, right? Like, and then not be weird. I went to this like douchey restaurant in Hamilton a couple weeks ago, and like the food they served, like it was tasty, but like you'd order the meat and they didn't tell you the sides didn't come like with it. Like they didn't tell you there weren't sides. So it was just like, I ordered like tandoori pork and it was just like a pile of tandoori pulled pork and there was nothing on the side. It was like weird. And like, my girlfriend got like a, you know, like a piece of like a wild boar chop and it was just a wild boar chop with nothing on the side. It was bizarre. But wings, yeah, you can just go straight meat. We'll stop confusing Harsh now. And we'll get into some actual basketball talk. You know who is a great wing?
Oh my god.
It's Terrence Ross.
Wow.
Wow.
We're gonna talk about him on the other side. We'll get into that. We're going to get into the Lakers game, the Warriors game, a whole bunch of other stuff. We'll be back in just a second with segment one. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley with Russell Peddle and Harsh DeVay. Let's dig into this Warriors game first. We could talk about the Hawks and Nuggets game if we want, but like that's sort of outdated. This is not a weekly recap podcast. It's more of a what's going on now podcast. And that Warriors game, I was unfortunately at like a Christmas party for work, and I only saw a little bit in the bar of the hotel we were in. We had to leave before the finish, and I was watching on my phone like as they were giving out door prizes and stuff. So I didn't get to really watch a whole ton of it, but from what I saw, holy crap, Kyle Lowry had the game of his life, and it still didn't matter because the Warriors are a machine. Harsh, what did you take from that Warriors game that the Raptors lost 112-109?
I saw a lot of talk about how, you know, moral victories, the Raptors are past that stage, and I kind of agree, right? I kind of agree that we know what this team is now. We want to see them sort of start acting on that potential, but to take the Warriors to one possession twice over the course of 10 days, and this is an unbeaten 22-0, like, you know, historically great team, and they're going down to the wire with them, I think that's obviously a great sign. Like, and they played their asses off, man, like both times, and last week, over the weekend too, like Kyle Lowry went toe-to-toe with Steph Curry. Like, that was impressive, man. Like, I don't know, like I'm not too upset about that game, really. The Nuggets game, yeah, I'm upset, but the Warriors game, no.
Yeah, well, I saw one stat that it's like the Warriors have lost have won four games by less than 5 points this season, and two were against the Raptors. So, like, as moral victories go, like, that's about as good as you're going to get.
Can we hang a banner that says that in the ACC?
I mean, it's better than a division banner, in my opinion, but... so I'm cool with that. We can hang it right next to Terrence Ross's jersey. that game, like, yeah, the Raptors, the thing is, like, they play the good teams really tough, and they, you know, they take massive dumps against teams like the Nuggets and the Knicks, but like they seem to play, they've had a lot of like really good wins this year. They beat the Thunder, they beat the Mavs, they beat the Hawks this week, like they beat the Cavs, like they've had some really solid wins. What's that? That the Clippers? Yeah, like they've played really well against teams that they probably shouldn't really have a shot at beating, and they've come through. And yeah, it's the games against the crap teams that's sort of going to kill them in the standings. But like, I don't know. I'm pretty happy with where things are right now. Russell, is there anything from that Warriors game that you wanted to point out?
I mean, just talking about the schedule, like the topic we were on, but I'll talk about the Warriors game in a second. But I think just in general, like, it's that weird cliche of like playing to their opponents, like, and they're putting themselves in these positions against teams that they should beat, like losing games. Like, for example, just to list through some of the losses versus some of the wins, like they, like you just did, they've lost to Orlando, they've lost to New York, they've lost to Sacramento, they've lost to the Jazz, who are better, but they've lost to the Suns, they've lost to the Nuggets, but they've beaten teams, like you said, the Hawks, the Cavs, the Clippers, the Mavericks, who are better than we thought, the Thunder, and came in close with two games with Golden State. So, I mean, at the end of the day, like...
And the Pacers, too.
And the Pacers, yeah, who are also really good now. So, like, you know, at the end of the day, do either of you guys feel like you know what this team is?
Harsh, do you want to take that?
Yeah. I mean, I sort of have a good idea of what this team is. I think and we've talked about this before on this podcast too, that they're really similar to what they were 2 years ago, right? Like, they're going to be in tough against almost everybody in the NBA. But they don't have that top level talent to really put them, you know, to make them a real contender. And I think that's just what they're destined to be, unless something happens to raise the ceiling of this team. And it seems sad, but I don't know. It's a lot of, like, you would have taken this like 3 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. 3 years ago, I would have. Now I'm a bit spoiled. I want to interject for a second, though. I think we need to stop saying that we don't, and we'll get to this later on, but I think we need to stop saying that we don't have a star talent, because I'm starting to think that we do. In Lowry, like, I think we need to stop kind of putting the qualifier on. I think Lowry's a really turning out to be a really special player, and he's just been having a fantastic season. So, like, I think that he can lead a team to a good record and potentially some playoff success. Obviously, we're not, like, you know, the games that they should be winning and they're not shows us that they're not going to be a team that's going to go very far. But at the same time, like, if they can put it all together, like, I don't know, like, going toe-to-toe with that Warriors team, that all-time great Warriors team, two times, makes me really legitimately feel like this team can beat anyone when things go right.
Yeah, I think there is a pretty good handle on what this team is. I think they're a very good defensive team that is surprisingly efficient on offense, given the way, you know, they get to the free throw line and the way Kyle Lowry just seems to be. He is like the closest thing to Steph this year that isn't Steph, the way he's playing.
Yeah, it's fair
to say. In terms of his 3-point shooting, like, he's been ridiculous. But then, like, it doesn't even like come close to what Steph's been. Harsh, did you want to add something there?
I sort of lost my train of thought.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah. I was looking at Kyle's numbers and going a little crazy.
Yeah.
He's been really good. And like, if you look at the East right now, I'm sort of the mind, we can just get to this now. Like, we don't have to be super structured in this. Like, so you look at the way the Raptors are right now. You look at the East. Like, obviously, Cleveland's still the best team. Miami's been really good. The Pacers have been really good. Chicago is winning, yet doesn't look very good. I feel like we rip on the Raptors a lot for crap games, like tonight against the Lakers, where they won but maybe shouldn't have won if they were playing a better team, just because they didn't play so hot. But, like, I don't know. The Raptors, I feel like they can be the second-best team in the East. And the thing with them is, like, the depth is what worries me most. And I think a trade is needed for them to be, like, a legitimate, you know, conference finals contender. But, there's, like, three different spots where they could use an upgrade via trade. Like, on the wing, they could use a scoring wing if Terrence Ross's emergence isn't actually real. And then there's, like, you know, there's the... My biggest thing is I think they need another ball handler, because they're relying so much on Joseph and Lowry, and eventually someone's going to break down. We saw it tonight. They looked a little banged up, just going to the net so hard all the time. I think they need a secondary ball handler. A guy like Darren Collison is like the guy that I'm dreaming on, that I would love to see them pick up. It would allow them to go to that two-guard look with Joseph and Lowry more often and not have to worry about staggering their minutes too much. I don't know. That's the thing that gets me. But then you look at the front court, and Luis Scola's played pretty poorly the last few games. Patrick Patterson's been really bad, especially tonight. He was terrible, but was like a team best in plus minus somehow. Like, that was bizarre. But, and you know, obviously with Jonas out, like their front court depth is just shot, and I don't really know where it is they need to trade. I think it's the ball handler thing, but I don't know. Like Russell, where are you with that?
Russell or Harse?
Russell.
to your point though, like I wanted to jump in there, but I didn't want to interrupt you about Toronto being potentially could very well be the second best team in the East. They absolutely could. I mean, like we look at the Raptors under a microscope, so we're constantly finding their flaws and saying negative things about them, but every team in the East is just as flawed as they are. They're only a game out of first,
mm-hmm.
like as of right now. So as are several teams. Like right now, top 10 teams in the East, the top 10, including the Cavs, are separated by 2 games.
Mm-hmm.
And the Raptors are only 1 game out of first. So it's one of those things where Indiana looks good, Miami looks good, Chicago looks good, Charlotte looks good, Atlanta looks good. Boston looks good, you know, in little spurts, New York, Orlando, like there are lots of teams. So I think that they could be that, but they really got to figure something out now with all the injuries and the depth issues. So that's one big thing for me is I don't like, they obviously need help. They need reinforcements, but I don't know if they can necessarily get there by trade. Cause again, we were talking anytime we brought up trades on this show, it's like, what do they give up? Because to get stuff, they need to give stuff up. And I mean, like, I guess you're giving up that New York pick, mm-hmm. or that Denver pick, I guess. Or so, yeah, New York. It'll be a New York pick because they'll probably finish better than Denver. So unless you're giving that up, and I think, like, as we got to it before, but I think I'm at the point where I would give that up to get reinforcements for this season, because the East is just so wide open. And like LeBron goes down with an injury in June or something like that, and then all of a sudden it's like, holy crap, any of these teams can make the finals.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a window right now with this team as it is, with Jonas and Lowry and DeRozan as the main core, and Carroll, of course. So I don't mind going out and getting that extra piece with that pick. Like, where do you guys stand on that? Because that's the only real tradable asset I think that we have now, or other than our own picks.
Yeah,
I'm cool with that.
I mean, we talked about this earlier too, like about the lack of depth. The big problem that the Raptors had is because they take so many, like because they have been taking so many flyers on these projects. It results in having dead roster spots like at the back end of your rotation, right? Like there's Anthony Bennett, then there's Nogueira, then there's Bruno, then there's DeLon Wright and Norman Powell. Now those are like five guys that are, you know, that's 10 to 15 or 11 to 15 in your rotation. So mm-hmm. when an injury happens and those guys aren't ready, then suddenly you start feeling the lack of depth, right? So and that's the problem that's been created with, you know, rightfully or wrongfully, like that's how Masai's constructed his team. And you know, we just have to live with it for the time being. Obviously, we're going to talk about the potential Bebe emergence, but you know, that's the type of thing that the Raptors need to happen. They need something. They need some X factor to come out of nowhere and start performing. Whether it's Anthony Bennett or Bebe Nogueira or DeLon Wright, like Sean, you were talking about needing a ball handler. Like I've been watching DeLon Wright in the D League, and like he's far and away the best player on that team. Like
mm-hmm.
by far, like they have a lot of issues on their D League team, but DeLon Wright is not one of them. And he looks ready. Like, I think he could come in and play right now. I don't know if their roster is constructed that way to have a third ball handler. I don't know if they have a spot for him, but if he needed mm-hmm. to play, if Lowry got hurt or if Corey Joseph got hurt, I know it's like tough to imagine, but I think DeLon Wright could do a fine job for like 10, 15 minutes a game.
Right. Yeah, the thing with me with that is just like I said, the way Joseph and Lowry have played together, it makes you want them to share as many minutes as possible with DeRozan at the 3 or at the 4 like he played tonight, which was pretty cool to see. And like then you worry about staggering the minutes and like who's going to operate the second unit offense. And I think if you had another ball handler, it would just, it was like last year they had three guys who could run the point, and it just sort of opened them up to all these different combinations in the backcourt. And I really would like to see that, especially if Wright can do it, that'd be amazing. I'm just not sure, like, you've watched it more than I have, so you probably have a better handle on that. Do you want to talk about Bebe for a sec, or do you want to get to this Lakers stuff? Let's get to the Lakers. We'll get to Bebe in a second, into the second segment. Let's talk about this game tonight. The Raptors came away with a 102-93 win. It wasn't super convincing. The third quarter was a bit of a disaster. They were outscored 29-19. Kobe and Terrence Ross had a fourth quarter duel. Terrence Ross led the Raptors in minutes at 38-46, filling in for the injured DeMar Carroll. Bebe was out, as we probably mentioned, I think, as well. Yeah, he was out tonight, despite playing pretty well the last couple games, so they sort of missed him a little bit. Bismack Biyombo had 15 points and 13 rebounds and a sweet dunk in the fourth.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. I thought DeRozan played a really smart game. Like, he only had 16 points, but he shot 50% from the field. He didn't really force anything, and he was passing really well all night. He took a couple threes that he missed. NBA.com only credited him with one three-point attempt.
That's
here.
Weird.
I thought I counted three.
I felt like he had more too many. Yeah, something. Probably the final one. He had a quietly good game. Like, it was one of those things where you didn't really notice him. He was in the game flow, which is something like the problem we've had with him basically is that he disrupts game flow. And I thought that was good. I thought there were some, I don't know, there were positive things. It's against the Lakers, so you have to take it all with a grain of salt. But yeah, and you know, we're missing like a third of our main rotation. But I think it's there's some positive signs. Like, obviously T. Ross playing a good game was one of them. Is that sustainable? It never is, but we'll see. Maybe he steps up now with the increased role and with the indefinite tag on Carroll's injury. Maybe we'll get to see. We'll probably be seeing a lot of them coming up. And I don't know. Like, I expected DeRozan to, in a game with, you know, after all the talk of Kobe and, you know, he kind of jumped in on KD's, Kevin Durant's comments about the media kind of getting on Kobe Bryant, which is a whole other thing I'm sure we'll talk about later. But I expected him to kind of come and lay some bricks as well. But funny enough, I mean, coming out of that game with T-Ross starting, DeRozan versus Kobe, if you told me that all three of those guys would shoot at 500 or better for the game, I would not have believed you, but they did. So, weird game. But, yeah, I mean, I thought there were some positive signs. I mean, Scola disappeared entirely, which was kind of weird, but, like, and like you said, Patterson was just absolute junk, but, you know, got a good game out of Joseph, got a good game out of DeRozan, a good quiet game out of DeRozan, but a great game out of Lowry again, and a great game out of Ross, so, like, so just a lot of positives in the game, although the game itself was kind of, I don't know about you guys, but I found it kind of hard, not hard to watch, but it was just kind of like, it was just happened. Like, it was not a,
I fell asleep. I fell asleep at halftime. I woke up towards the end of the third quarter and it was like a tie game. And I'm like, wait, what the hell's going on?
I think I just didn't like that it was a big Kobe circle jerk. Can I say that on this?
Yes, of course you can say that. We just talked about sex wings. We can talk about circle.
Yeah, true. Fair enough. Anyway, I just, the Kobe thing, it was like, it's cool. This was last time playing in Toronto, but I don't really, well,
he'll get voted in as an all-star starter.
Yeah, so. Then that's a whole other thing too.
Yeah.
It was good and all, but I didn't like that took away from everything. And like the crowd, like, I'm so proud of the Toronto crowds at those games, and tonight was just really hard to watch, like them cheering on another team. And I get that it's a legacy and he deserves it, and you know there are lots of people are entitled to be Kobe fans and whatever. But it's just like it was such a weird game to watch with him, people chanting for him while he was at the line, and like there were times when it felt like the majority of the people there were Lakers fans, and it was. It made the game kind of annoying to watch, I guess. And then because there wasn't a lot happening in it that was all that exciting, it was kind of a drag, if anything.
Yeah, I'm with you on the whole Kobe farewell tour thing, especially tonight. Like, I thought it was a kind of a joke that the entire crowd was cheering for Kobe the entire night and, like, calling for him when he was on the bench. Like, we want Kobe. Like, it was pizza. and just, like, this quote Michael Grange tweeted out from Meta World Peace after the game on the fans' love for Kobe. Quote, "It's amazing. It's like they're horny for it. Horny fans, make sure you word that right." It's true. Like, it's so bizarre. I guess for me, it's more of a personal preference thing. Like, I was never a giant Kobe fan. I never really enjoyed his game that much. If it makes me weird, I guess whatever. But, like, I was always more of a fan of, like, my two favorite guys growing up were Steve Nash and Kevin Garnett. And I was never really huge on the Kobe thing. I was one of those people who was like, oh, I don't like Kobe growing up. Like, now I just, like, I appreciate how great he was, but also I've also kind of accepted that he's been gone for like 3 years, and I don't know why we need this 60-game farewell tour to say goodbye when he's sort of not really been relevant in terms of, like, you know, being a skilled contributor to a team.
That's a fantastic point that's been lost in all this, is that he is exactly that. Like, he hasn't made an impact on an NBA team in a few years now, so it doesn't really feel like he's – I don't know. It feels like it's after the fact. It's like when a player you know, doesn't get signed by a team and then is sitting around for 2 or 3 years as a free agent and then all of a sudden announces their retirement and everyone's like, yeah.
Yeah, with Kobe, I don't know, man. Like, just you look at it from the start, the fact that, yeah, you look at all these guys whose careers are ending right about now, with Dirk, Duncan, Garnett, all these guys are, you know, nearing the ends of their career. Even Steve Nash, the way that Steve Nash went out was, you know, without any fanfare. It's just my body doesn't let me do it anymore, and I'm done. And he was gone, right? And with Kobe, there was this when he announced that he's retiring, and he came to the podium, and he's like, first of all, there was that poem, and then he came to the podium at that press conference and was like, you know, this is a weight off my shoulders. Like, I'm doing this. It makes it easier for me or something. And it's just like, what? Like, none of that is true. Like, it's just, this is all just self-indulgent bullshit. Like, he just wants the nice, like, farewell tour. And Kobe's whole persona has always been about, like, the way that he's branded himself, the way that he's marketed himself, is that I am this guy who works so hard to get everything he wants. Like, I don't care about what anyone else thinks. I'm just all about winning. And this all just plays into that, right? Like, he just needs that one last hurrah to show that he's beyond the game. Like, he's so far beyond normal other NBA basketball players. It just irks me. It's like, this isn't even necessary. Like, you look at the damage that he's doing to his team by taking like 25 shots a game at like a 30% usage rate, shooting like 30% from the field or whatever, like something along those lines. It's just, it's so damaging to like all the young players on their team. Like, it bothers me so much. Like, I'm not saying that he's not entitled to his last year of money. Like, go get that money. Like, I'm always on team on the player side when it comes to this, right? If somebody's willing to pay you, go get that money, right? I'm never gonna come at a player for choosing to get his paycheck, right? But it's like, if you're not ready to play, just sit on the bench and ride it out,
right? Yeah,
like the way that Steve Nash did, just sit on the bench and ride it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he hasn't done it gracefully. And yeah, he was shooting 29.6% coming into tonight. Last week when he went 4-for-17 against the Sixers, it actually raised his three-point percentage at that point. Like,
it's ridiculous.
He's been like, by all metrics, he's been the worst. It's been like the worst season in history by like a high volume player. He's been so bad. And yeah, like, there's going to be so many opportunities to celebrate Kobe's career. And right now, when he's such an obvious detriment to his team, and we're 60 games from the end of the season, and like the retirement isn't even close, and like he still has all these last games and however many cities to play, like, it doesn't feel like the right time to be just like praising him. And like, even tonight on the broadcast, it was just like, Kobe Bryant, Kobe Bryant, Kobe Bryant. Oh man, when the crowd was chanting Kobe Bryant's name to like come into the game, I'm pretty sure Leo was like, oh yeah, Dwayne Casey's not saying anything. He doesn't want him in. And it's like, no, that's not true. Like, anyone who has a brain wants Kobe in the game right now because he's such a detriment. Like, it's just such a, like, as you said, it's a circle jerk over Kobe. And I know it's weird the like the cult of like NBA players just love the guy. Like you can't say a bad thing about Kobe around them. Like it's just like, and I feel like the people who cover the game maybe then too closely and, you know, analyze it maybe a little too closely. Don't really, maybe we don't appreciate Kobe enough for what he was, but I can tell you right now, like I'm thoroughly tired of the Kobe.
The big defense you'll hear is like, oh, this team isn't going anywhere anyway, so why not just let the fans like enjoy it or whatever? But it's like, no, like, why? Like, like he has a team still, like, you know, like, yeah, the team's not going anywhere, but there are players on that team like fighting for roster spots. You know,
what better time is there for to develop guys like D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson and Julius Randle than a season that isn't going to mean anything and have them ready for a season that will mean something?
Exactly. And now you've turned this season into a freak show. Like there might be a guy on their roster, like I don't even know who, but like maybe there's the 13th man on their roster who could have been getting 10 to 15 minutes a game trying to earn his spot. You know, like it just rubs me the wrong way. Like he's literally taking away a chance at earning a paycheck for somebody else, right? That's what bothers me.
Here's another quote from post game. Mark Medina of the LA Daily News: Kobe on his high volume shooting, I take what the defense gives me.
Puke. Yeah, right. And another problem I have with all this is the defense that some players like the younger players like DeRozan and Kevin Durant, like I mentioned earlier, lumping the media together, which basically is just anyone that writes or speaks about basketball, whether on any level, are disrespecting Kobe's career by pointing out that he's bad, being really bad, which I just think is a load of garbage, because it's like you can't ignore the fact that he's having one of the worst seasons ever recorded in NBA history. Like his legacy is going, you know, and the people that write these negative things about him obviously have to go through that requisite, like, oh yeah, this many All-Star games and this many All-NBA teams and this many points, and like you have to say that stuff. You have to respect the fact that he has had a really amazing career. He's got the 5 rings. He's got the MVP trophy, blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, when we go to Basketball Reference, the Play Index, and we go and we search like really, really crappy records from now till the end of time, his name is going to keep popping up for this year. Like
right next to Terrence Ross. At least pre-December 7th. 2015 Terrence Ross.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like it's not, you can't just ignore it or say like, okay, yeah, well he had a lot of really good years. So basically here you go. Here's the ball. Go do what you want with it. You're not going to put a bad name on yourself or on basketball just because you've earned it. You've earned the right to, you know, go down with guns blazing. It's like, it's silly.
There's also Russell, we were talking about this off air, the All-Star thing, which is going to be really annoying too.
Oh, I hate that. I'm really mad about that.
He's almost definitely making the All-Star game, and that's going to be so bullshit.
Yeah, I hate that.
So it's going to be another it's going to be another Toronto goodbye to him. So like today was just not even, there wasn't a point in saying goodbye because he's going to be back.
Exactly. Yeah.
Plus he blows out his Achilles between now and then.
Absolutely.
It's always a possibility.
But it's going to drive me nuts because someone, a deserving player, is going to be snubbed and is not going to have that on their resume in a season that they deserved it. Like, let's say, like, for instance, I don't know,
Conley or someone.
Well, Conley's not really in the conversation this time, though, but like in the past he would have been. But I mean, let's just say Draymond Green, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, he's having a monster season, like a really good season, but because the Warriors are good enough, they'll have like 2 or 3 guys there. That's probably not a good example. But anyway, there's going to be someone, Derek Favors. Here we go. Derek Favors is having a fantastic season. I bet you he doesn't make the All-Star game, and I bet you Kobe does. And that's going to make me really, really angry.
I was talking about this with like a Lakers blogger or something, and you know, understandably, he's a Lakers fan. Like he was basically saying that if the fans want it, then why not? Why not have him start?
I've always hated that argument because
I agree. And I'm saying go ahead.
Because it goes on their resume. Like later on when we talk about Hall of Fame qualifications, and we talk about, and I mean, it's not like I'm saying Derek Favors is going to have a hall, going to potentially be in the Hall, but I mean, like when you talk about these players at the end of their careers, you list stuff, and whether we like it or not, we list All-Star games as one of the big things that qualifies how good they were. And I don't like that there are these like legacy awards, like someone like Tim Duncan or Dirk Nowitzki getting in fine because they're earning it. But when it comes to Kobe getting voted in on the popularity vote, like I agree that the fans should decide, then it is a spectacle for the fans. But if that's the case, then we have to stop recording it as part of their like basketball profile. Like we need to make it a true
like
exhibition
we should
game
like
and not
stop
make it
counting it.
It should be all NBA. That's the more
it's all or none. You can't make it such a big part of their resume, but then say oh, it's just for the fans. It doesn't mean anything. It's like, well, it kind of does.
Mm-hmm.
I was
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just saying that like one of the solutions that I was thinking was like, you know, maybe there's like a version of like a lifetime achievement, like roster spot, like a bonus roster spot where they just like stick one of these guys in. Like, sure, yeah, the fans really want to see him. Okay, put him in the spot.
I like that.
Still add like the original 15-man roster or whatever. Like, I don't know how many people there are, but you know,
it's 12.
Like, yeah, 12. So still have your 12 plus give like a lifetime achievement, which
honorary captain or something.
Yeah, like in certain scenarios, like, you know, extenuating circumstances, you add this roster spot. I don't know, maybe something like that could work, because I agree, man, like there's a deserving player who's gonna get snubbed, and what if it's their one season where they have like they're outstanding and they're deserving of a roster spot.
Exactly.
That's why I was pissed when Lowry didn't get in 2 years ago, because I'm like, what if he never has a season that good again and he just got snubbed? And yeah, so whatever.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement here. Sorry, Kobe. I know you're listening. and sorry to any players who are listening who are not happy with our critique of Kobe. But I think the other thing, too, is just it seems way too early to announce this. It's just like, as you mentioned, Harsh, it's just him. It feels like him just like setting himself up for a season long, you know.
You can't announce it this early and then be like, oh, I don't want a farewell tour. It's like, well, just. Just tell us when the season's done. Then, like Duncan will eventually finish a season and be like, "Okay, I'm done now." And you're like, what?
"Yeah, I'm gonna go drink wine. See ya."
Yeah.
just to finish. All right. Duncan all time better than Kobe.
One last thing about this is, you know, like this is clearly like a marketing ploy, because when he announced his retirement via poem or something, there was like a branded logo at the bottom. And that's like the brand that's being carried forward with like,
oh, the hero villain thing.
Yeah, that shit, right?
It's making a lot of puke.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's there's that. And then you remember like last year, he also released a documentary, right? So this is all just posturing for his post-career legacy. Like this is all part of it. This all plays into it. Which is why it's so bullshit when he comes up to like the media, like in a press conference, and he's like, oh, you know, I'm just doing this to get this weight off my chest. Like, I knew it was over. I felt like I owed it to the fans and shit. It's like, what? Man, just go away. If you're done, just go away.
He's got a film crew following him around, too, apparently. So that's like, and people knew about that before he actually formally announced the retirement. So this shouldn't have come as a surprise, I guess.
Good times, guys. Good times. So we're going to wrap this segment. We went long there. We're going to come back on the other side. We're going to talk about our boy Bebe. We're going to talk about some injuries. Going to talk about a couple of things, and then we'll get to our episode sponsor at the end, who's familiar to Kobe. We'll get to that a little later on. We'll be back in just a second on the headquarters. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley, Russell Peddle, and Harsh DeVay. We're going to talk about our boy Bebe. This past week was something of a renaissance for Bebe Noguera, who had his first like real NBA minutes, I guess, like not garbage time, not junk time, not meaningless minutes. He played in that Atlanta game on Wednesday, I guess it was, where the Raptors had a terrible first half, had a monster second half, and came back and won. Bebe, I believe, had 4 points, 7 rebounds, and a couple blocks in his. He played the entire fourth quarter in that game, and got some people excited. We talked about this a few episodes back about how we just wanted to see Bebe play, just to see what he could do and if he could be an NBA player. And lo and behold, like he looks like he might be a pretty solid backup. Harsh, let's start with you. Has your opinion of Bebe changed in the last week or so? Here, are you a little more excited about what he could bring?
Well, firstly, I was on the Bebe bandwagon for a long time. We talked about this here as well, man. Like, he right now, obviously this is a super small sample, but like he's second in, on the team in net rating, right? And he was had a team leading plus 22 against Atlanta. Like there's a legit skill set there. I would say he's already their best passing big man, maybe next to Scola, maybe, right? Like this is a dude who is putting up near triple doubles in the D League. Like sure, yeah, caveat of it being the D League. But you know, this is a guy with a unique skill set. Like I think it's the first time I saw a guy convert alley-oops like that with Kyle Lowry. You know what I mean? Like this is Kyle Lowry's fourth year here. I've never seen somebody with that, just that natural chemistry with Kyle Lowry. That was pretty cool to see, you know, and he's a guy who's, you can see like the way that he gets himself ready in the paint, like with his length, he's altering shots automatically. Like he has the type of length that I don't even think JV has, where he's just like totally frightening people from attacking the rim. And yeah, like as a rotation option, like now you consider that you have Bebe, you have Biombo, you have Jonas Valanciunas when he's healthy, and suddenly now you have like three legit centers to throw different looks at the opposition depending on who you're facing. And we saw against Golden State, like he still has some work to do. He's still figuring out, like, you know, when he gave Steph Curry too much space off the pick. And Steph Curry nailed the three-pointer because you have to close him down. Like, there's stuff like, there's growing pains, but that's okay. Like, I love the fact that Dwayne Casey's keeping the faith and letting him play the fourth quarter. I think this is only going to bode well for his development. And, man, like, for his first three games of getting meaningful minutes in the NBA, like, I honestly can't imagine getting better returns than what we saw.
Yeah, the thing is, like, yeah, he still struggles like guarding out to the perimeter. He got killed in that Phoenix game before he really started getting regular run by Teletovich and Lure. But yeah, like he's a deterrent in the middle there. And it's nice, like I think Blake and Will were talking about this on that Hated Other podcast. Just sort of like if he can do some of the things that Biombo can do defensively, he's not as good a defender as Biombo is, but like if he can catch the ball and actually have some touch around the rim, that is such a huge advantage because right now, like, I think it was the Raptors Republic account that pointed it out tonight. Like, Roy Hibbert was just, like, leaving Biombo alone and just hanging in the lane and just waiting for guys to come at the basket because, like, you don't really need to account for Biombo because he's so inefficient scoring around the basket. And, like, if you can have a guy who's actually a threat to score right in close, like, that is huge. Russell, what have you noticed from Bebe so far?
Well, that's what I like, the touch around the rim, and like you said, the chemistry with Lowry. Like, it reminds me of trying to think of like some good alley-oop partners, like Chris Paul and Tyson Chandler back in the Hornets. Like, just like they were always looking for each other, and I found like it's obviously like a small sample size, but it's one of those things that could really grow into something. I was actually on the defensive end, I was a little bit discouraged. There were a lot of plays I noticed where I found like he didn't play the ball. Like he didn't help. Like there were a couple instances where there was a layup coming in and he just kind of watched it happen where I would have liked to have seen him contest. But overall, I mean, positive signs from someone that, you know, could come in and get a few minutes. And like when you think about when people are healthy and, you know, it just gives you more options and lineups in a team that doesn't seem like it's super deep. So if he becomes a, you know, if he takes like, I don't know, what we'd liken it to from previous years, but you know, a good 12 to 15 minute role where he can come in and you know, help with the scoring, like you said, around the rim and grab some boards. And what I love about him is he's just, you know, one thing I love about guys that just very active pick setters, like he's just such a willing pick and roll guy. And it creates some good opportunities and it keeps the ball moving. And he's always moving. Which is like, you love players like that are just, he's out there trying to earn his paycheck and he's fun to watch. And I don't know, he's cool. He's got the big hair and you're like, he's a type of guy that like, you feel like you could really root for. And he's going to be one of those guys that, you know, we talk about our episode sponsors. It seems like he'll someday be like a fun guy that we'll talk about. So I hope he develops into a decent role player. Like I'm not setting my expectations super high or anything, but if, you know, if he starts to get real minutes for the big club, I think that's something that they could really use, and especially now for over the next month or so while we're still waiting for JV to come back.
Harsh, is it like sort of weird that it doesn't seem like the Raptors are really falling off a ton without JV?
Yes and no. Like, JV's always been the type of guy, like, you remember last year where as good as he was, as efficient as he was, they were better without him. They were better without him on the floor on offense and defense, which was super counterintuitive, especially when you consider like his rim protection and just his touch around the rim and how good he was in the post. It just doesn't make sense. He's always been one of those guys who seems to get all of his offense sort of not really in the flow of what they're trying to do. So I'm not that surprised by it. And also you consider what, you know, what Lowry's been doing for this team. Like it's, they're fine like without Lowry. I mean, they're fine without anybody as long as Lowry's going like this, right? Like DeMar can go hot and cold. They can have DeMar Carroll go hot and cold or get injured, and as long as Lowry's playing like, you know, the top guard in the East, they'll be all right. But obviously in the long run, it'd be nice to have JV back. One quick note, I like on Bebe, right? Like I was talking to I was talking to Jesse Mirmis after last week's game, again, like in the D League, and he was just talking about how Bebe's emergence is so big for the organization, right? Like they've invested so much in having a D League team, in creating this sort of atmosphere in their, like from the top down, where, you know, guys go down to Mississauga, they go back up to Toronto, up and down, shuttling up and down. Like so much has gone into player development at the lower levels, and seeing a guy like Bebe perform and actually come through, like take minutes, you know, use his minutes in the D League to actually perform for the big team, it's massive for the organization. And it's like, it's almost like validation that everything that they're doing, yeah, it will pay off for even like guys like Bruno or DeLon Wright.
I mean, he was a first round pick for a reason, right? Like he had the talent. He was, I believe, defensive player of the year in the Spanish ACB. Like he's really, you know, he's got a bunch of raw talent in there, and it's really nice to have that sort of culture of development where, you know, it's not like a negative thing with a stigma to be sent down to the D League now. It's just sort of, you're going to go down there, you're going to get minutes, you're going to put up almost triple doubles. And like DeLon Wright seems to be sort of on that same curve, right? Like he, in his few minutes he played at the NBA level, he looked really out of place, you know, turning the ball over. And then, you know, if he goes down to the D League, he's given more of an opportunity. He's given the reins sort of to just sort of handle things and get his shot up and work on things. And it's actually, you know, this D League thing is turns out it's going to work out, I think. And like, it's a lot like, you know, the Warriors and Spurs have used that D League system with the close by team to their advantage all the time, right? Like Corey Joseph is exactly like that. I believe, you know, like guys like James Michael McAdoo, like go down to the D League, play for a bit and come back up and be like a dependable guy that you can plug in and he can play some minutes for you, right? So I think it's definitely working out. Let's talk about Damari Carroll's injury. This one sucks. He wasn't playing super well leading into it. Like he was still being, you know, gritty Damari Carroll and trying as hard as he could, but like obviously he was a little gimpy. What does this injury mean for the Raptors, Russell? Is this something that you're a little more concerned about than, say, the Valanciunas injury?
Mostly because right now we're just treated in mystery, because it's like we didn't know that he was hurt necessarily. Like he was he had that plantar fasciitis thing and he was out for three games, but we haven't really heard about it since. And you know, he's shooting well below his career averages from the field, from the line, from like he's just, you know, shots a little off. The rest of his stats are pretty much in line. He's playing the most minutes he's ever played in his career per game. So it was like, okay, well, maybe it's not going to be that big of a problem. Like, he's a tough dude. And then all of a sudden there's like, okay, here's this knee injury, and it's a knee contusion, and it's new, and he's out indefinitely. And out indefinitely is one of those things that people get scared of when they hear, because they think that could mean, like, so he could be gone forever, you mean? But
could be a week.
But it could be, yeah, indefinitely just means we actually don't know. Like, it could be a couple games. It could be a couple months. Like, we don't know. So it kind of scares me, the unknown factor here. And basically just because we've seen that he's just a very important part of the team, like when it comes to guarding wing players, and he's a glue guy, and it's, he's, you know, I've really, really from day one been really excited by this acquisition. And if, you know, I don't want to, his first season with the team, he's got these like just these little nagging health problems. It's a bit of a downer because we're not really going to get the full effect of having him on the team. So hopefully it doesn't last too long. It's funny because on my other site that I write for, Numberfire, I wrote a fantasy basketball column today saying how he was an absolute buy candidate because, you know, he's going to come around and he's playing through some things. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's going to regress to the mean with his shooting and all that stuff. And, of course, tonight he's like, oh, yeah, out indefinitely. But so I obviously cursed him. It's like the Jonah Carey curse on baseball players. But anyway, all that said, it's one of those things where I guess maybe it ignites something in Terrence Ross. And we saw that tonight. And if that ends up being a benefit for it, that when Carroll comes back, then Terrence Ross has got something, has got things rolling a little bit more and can maybe be more of a contributor coming off the bench, then, you know, it's a chance to try other rotations and things like that. It you know, if you're going to perpetually look for a silver lining in all these things, then, you know, there are a lot of players out. So we're going to try and figure something out. And, you know, the team clearly has shortcomings, like when it comes to the terrible first quarter performances and things like that. So if we're going to be missing JV and we're going to be missing Carroll and potentially missing Bebe and, you know, things are getting thin, then the team's going to be forced to try new things and maybe they'll find a combination that works.
Harsh, sort of going off of that, you were sort of talking about tonight, if Patrick Patterson isn't playing well, you want to see more Anthony Bennett. With Carroll being out, do you want to see more Bennett?
Probably not. Because the reason why I was going to say that you miss Carroll more than JV, and it sounds weird to say, but, you know, it's with when a guy like JV goes out, JV's strictly a five, right? So you can shuffle your rotation around, get Carroll minutes at the four, you know, move Scola over, move Biombo over. You can sort of patch things together and make it work. Where when a guy like Carroll goes out, like, first of all, he's so intelligent, like his IQ is through the roof, right? Mm-hmm. And when he goes out, he's a guy you potentially play at 2, 3, or 4, right? And that just screws up your entire wing rotation. Like, now you're playing Terrence Ross, you're starting Terrence Ross, and the drop off from Terrence Ross, from Carroll to Ross, like, we don't even need to talk about it. Like, we can feel it. Mm-hmm. Well, not when Ross plays today, but you know what I mean. And then you know, like James Johnson starts playing bigger minutes, and then Corey Joseph starts playing more minutes at the two. Like, it's just not an ideal situation, but I don't know, man. Like, hopefully his injury is not a big deal, because I'm with Russell, man. Like, I thought he was gonna start coming around, like, as he started, you know, healing from his plantar fasciitis. Like, I was like, Damari Carroll's gonna start hitting his shots. He's gonna start being more effective on defense. Like, I was excited to see what was next, but yeah, I guess we'll have to wait a bit.
Maybe this is a blessing, though. Like, it just gets him sat down. Like, it's,
yeah, just
it's,
heal up.
The plantar fasciitis was something that he wasn't going to sit with. Maybe this knee thing is. I mean, who knows? This might be even just related to it. I mean, you always hear about guys overcompensating when they're recovering from things and then leading to other problems. So maybe that's got something to do with it. I don't really know. I'm not a doctor, but where was I going with that? Before you interjected with that weird squeal.
You're not a doctor. That's what you said.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, but yeah.
I'm a doctor all this time, sorry.
Yeah.
Maybe this just gets him to sit down for an extended period of time, enough to rest up that plantar fasciitis. Maybe in the long run it's fine, and hopefully they can just sort of tread water here. The schedule is going to lighten up a little bit here.
Well, the good thing is Terrence Ross is now an all-star, so.
Well, yeah, obviously. Yeah, so. Terrence Ross.
So we should be fine.
Yeah.
This is all gravy, man. This is actually, it's a good thing.
I'm actually kind of down with DeMar DeRozan at the four a little bit, just to see it.
Like,
I don't
six
know
foot
if it's
five
actually,
DeMar DeRozan.
I don't know if it works in practice, but like, just to see it and get weird. I like getting weird, whatever. I don't care. He was like the only guy who could defend Paul Pierce at the four last year in the playoffs. So that's pretty much his entire resume for the four.
How excited are you about James Johnson minutes, Sean?
I was sort of intrigued by the James Johnson, Patrick Patterson front court, but
it didn't work out.
Well, Patterson was really bad tonight. He was so bad. And Johnson was sort of unremarkable. The upcoming schedule here, we got the Spurs coming up on Wednesday. That's sort of the last really tough game before it sort of evens out a little bit. There's not really any easy games in the East left anymore because there's a lot of pretty solid teams. But, I mean, you're coming up, you have the Bucks, who are kind of bad, the Sixers, the Pacers, who the Raptors beat already this season, the Hornets, the Heat. That's a tough one. But then you got like the Kings, the Mavs, the Bucks again, the Wizards, who are struggling. So the end of this year, like the end of December, sort of looks like a little bit easier than what they've had so far. So maybe this is the best time to be able to deal with these injuries. I don't know. What are you guys expecting from the Spurs on Wednesday? Corey Joseph revenge game, Russell?
Yeah, I'd say there'll be a bit of that going on. It'd be cool to see him kind of face off against his mentor in Tony Parker, and a guy who's he's obviously, you know, modeled a fair bit of his game around.
His mentor and his inferior?
Yeah, at this point. That's a whole other story.
Tony Parker's actually been really good this year.
He has been, yeah, to his credit. I think that, you know what? Like, now that I've seen the Raptors hang with the Warriors, I would normally look at that and go like, oh, well, they're going to lose to the Spurs. But you know what? They'll probably hang in there. They'll probably be there in the game. They might falter down the stretch, or maybe they pull out a really good win. But it'll either be a victory or a moral victory. Like, I don't necessarily expect them to be blown out. So, especially with the Corey Joseph factor, I think will be an interesting little a highlight after a game where we highlighted a guy on the other team for the majority of the night. It'll be kind of fun to pay attention to one of our guys a bit more. I think it'll be it's always an interesting game facing like a really elite team that you only see once or twice. You only see twice a year. So, and once in the respect that they only come to Toronto once a year. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And the Spurs is a team that I haven't watched too much of this year, so I would like to get a look at how they're operating with LaMarcus Aldridge and things like that. So I'll be watching that for sure. And Kawhi is just an absolute pleasure to watch play. And they rested their guys tonight, which means that they should be all hands on deck tomorrow.
They beat the Sixers by a Terrence Ross game, 51. Like, it's ugly. The Spurs have like a historically great defense through 20 games so far.
I'm excited to see what Kawhi is going to do to DeMar.
Yeah, that's going to be ugly. Like, DeMar has historically struggled with really, really strong wing defenders.
Yeah, it's going to be bad.
And, you know, if DeMar plays like he did tonight, where he wasn't forcing things and not...
I think we're going to get a vintage 6-for-22 DeMar game.
Oh, why are you going so hard like against DeMar?
It's my brand, bro.
I got to say, the Brick Mason is a really, really good nickname.
Yeah.
one more thing before we wrap up, just to go back to what we talked about in the first segment with Kobe and the cult of players loving him. Jonas Valanciunas just tweeted a picture of Kobe, who signed his cast today.
Yeah, I just saw that.
Yeah, so that's cool.
that's cool.
What the hell's going on here? All right. I think we're going to wrap it up. We're going to get to our episode sponsor. We'll be back in just a second on the headquarters. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley, Russell Peddle, Harsh DeVay, wrapping it up here with our episode sponsor. This week's episode of the headquarters is brought to you by Morris Peterson, in honor of Kobe Bryant's 81-point game. Oof. In which he torqued both Jalen Rose and Morris Peterson. We're going to honor Mo Pete today. Pretty like just like underwhelming career overall, but was like one of the best Raptors ever, which is, you know, pretty par for the course with the Raptors. his peak was in 2005-06. He scored 16.8 points a game, 4.6 rebounds, 2.3 assists, shot 39.5% from three, 82% from the free throw line. That was a really good year for him, actually. And then he left one more year with the Raptors where he had a down year. And then he left for New Orleans where this just sort of petered out from there.
Solid pun.
I didn't even pick that up.
Well done.
Oh, good job, me. we just realized that he finished his career with the Oklahoma City Thunder. He played four games, averaged a point a game, played 23 total minutes. That's a sad ending for a guy who was, you know, a strange, like, big part of the Raptors' history. Like, he was here for... He was one of those role players that, like, we talked about with, like, Alvin Williams, where he doesn't stick with the team for a long time, but... Or, sorry, he sticks with the team for a long time, but he's just sort of a role player, right? It's it's not common. Russell, any huge memories from Morris Peterson?
Yeah, I mean, he was one of my favorite Raptors for sure. It was actually cool. The preseason game in Montreal, he was there, and I had kind of like a starstruck moment to be kind of like, I was like, oh, cool, he's there. Like, I grew up really liking him, and he was one of those players that wasn't like necessarily a star, but just brought effort and played well on both ends. And he's just like, he's one of those guys that, despite the fact that he played, you know, a few seasons in New Orleans and those four games with OKC, he's a career Raptor, and we don't have a lot of those. So, like, you know, whenever there are events or galas or anything, like looking back at the history of the team, like he's still heavily involved and like, you know, did those spots with TSN where he was, you know, he sometimes comments on games and stuff like that. So he's part of the team and he's there in the lore, you know, and there are a lot of moments like other than him being in the game where, you know, Kobe dropped 81, but also, also just like the one thing that stands out to me, and I can't remember, give these specific details of the game. I think it might've been the Wizards, but that weird, like, ball got thrown up in the air and he grabbed it and made that last second.
Michael Ruffin.
That's what it was.
Bobbled it. Yeah. And yeah,
that sticks out in my head for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, just a solid guy, solid player. He's one of my favorites. Like, I think if I had to list my 10 favorite Raptors based on like some mix of skill and just kind of being part of the team's lore, like he would be one of the first ones that would come to mind. I'm actually pretty excited that we're talking about him today. Like, I think he's one of the bigger ones. I want to do it justice because we're kind of burning like one of the bigger ones for this segment.
Mm-hmm. Harsh, do you have any big Mopey memories?
Yeah. I remember remember that layup that he hit when the headband fell over his face?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And like it was like D Brown blind, like he was just hit that layup, and like he was like the king of circus shots for a bit. Like he just hit a bunch of those. The other stuff I remember, oh man, do you remember how he was man, those were some dark times in Raptor history. So
we say that a lot.
I remember when Chuck Swirsky would, you know, we'd have to hype up all the small things like the 3-point streak and shit, and one of the things that we talked about a lot was his Iron Man streak.
Yeah.
He was like the league's Iron Man for a long time. And I remember when his streak ended, like I remember the interview that he gave pregame because it was like such a big deal that it came to an end. The other thing I remember he was about to leave for the Hornets as a restricted free agent, but we matched the offer. We matched the offer sheet. And then when he became an unrestricted free agent, he did sign with the Hornets. And then when he came back to Toronto, like he kissed center court. And I was like, that's our dude, man. Like that, like Morris Peterson was like an all time favorite. I love that guy, man. And I'm so glad that at least he was here for the 2006-07 playoff run. Like I'm glad he saw the peak Vince era and he was here for Chris Bosh. Like I'm glad like that dude was there. Like that's one of the Raptor all-time greats. Like I don't care if his numbers don't stack up, just like what he meant to me as like in that time of my life, like growing up, like I was like, you know, 12, 13 watching Morris Peterson and I don't know, man, he just stuck through it. Like he was there to see the team go from absolute garbage to like pretty good.
Very well said. So,
yeah, man.
It's funny you mentioned that game where he came back and kissed center court. I was at that game. I actually was in like a box with my dad for that game, and it was like the coolest thing ever. And I was so excited because it was Morris Peterson's first game back, and it was a really cool moment. Like I love that guy growing up too. And I think that's my biggest Mopey memory is,
man,
his first game back in Toronto with the Hornets, and how like heartbroken I was to see him in a Hornets jersey, but also how excited I was to see him back.
Yeah, like man, like we're talking about Mopey, man. This is cheesy, but like I get chills like thinking about it, man. Like that's that's my dude. Like I don't care if he's bad on TV. I don't care what anyone thinks. Like Morris Peterson will be like an all time favorite.
Yeah. Do you guys want to play a game of who played that night?
I'm afraid you're eventually going to expose me as not really good at this game. The two games that I've been Like, I the episode I wasn't on, you guys did this before. It was like, oh, we're not as good as Russ. It was like, the two games you gave are two games that I've seen on NBA TV like a dozen times each. So I'm actually probably not as good at this as I once seemed. So, yeah, okay. If we want to really, really break the illusion here, then, yeah, toss a game at me.
Well, we'll go with I was going to go with that that game with actually, yeah, let's go the 81-point game.
Okay, this is another one that falls under that category, so this will make me look good, and then I'll retire after this one.
Damn it, I'm going to be bad at this one, too.
Okay, we'll play the 81-point game. So Morris Peterson has obviously won. 10 Raptors suited up in this game.
What's the date?
It is, let's see here, January 22nd, 2006. Okay. So Morris Peterson is one.
Well, Jalen Rose
is definitely Rose, yeah, in that game, because he talks about that all the time, that being that 81-point game. Mm-hmm. Mike James was in that game, because I remember him being the he was actually the best Raptor in that game.
Yeah, he had 26 points on 10 of 15 shooting, 6 of 8 from 3.
Another thing here that works in my favor is they showed highlights of this today during the game. Bosch was there.
Mm-hmm.
This would have been post Vince. We said Rose, James, Peterson, Bosch, the other starter would have
we
been.
We definitely had some white centers in there.
We had one white starter.
I was going to say Charlie V, but if it was white, it was Matt.
Oh, Charlie V's in there. He was on the bench.
Okay. Matt Bonner would have been the other one.
Yep. So there's four left.
Okay.
Is Rosho there?
No Rosho. Two of them are former episode sponsors.
Oh, boy.
Okay, let me think about this for a second. You guys did, like, Joey Graham last week, didn't you?
Mm-hmm, he's in there.
Okay. Jose would have still been there.
Yep, he's there. There's two more.
Two significant players, or...
No, they played 10 and 6 minutes, respectively.
This could be where it gets tough. Because this is, like, again...
Tell me something about them.
One is, like, a really bad center.
In Raptors history, that doesn't really narrow it down.
He's probably going to be an episode sponsor just because he was... Because of his name, I guess? I don't know.
Is that the back? No, that was too late.
One of them was in a very big trade the season before.
Eric Williams?
Yeah.
Yes.
I was about to say that. Good one.
There's one left.
A bad center from that period. Arujo was that year, but...
No Arujo.
Your boy. Sao, So, whatever his name
yep,
is.
Yep, Popso.
Yeah. Popso.
You got upset last time when you couldn't get him, or didn't you?
Oh my god.
Popso.
Dude, I remember when Popso was going to come back from injury. I was like, yes, the star has returned.
Oh my god. He's no Terrence Ross.
It didn't work out.
So yeah, that was another episode of, or another round of who played that game in Raptors history.
I'm absolutely retiring after that one, because that is literally you. You've now picked literally the three games that I've watched a dozen times each on NBA TV replay. So, like anything else is just going to completely expose me as a fraud. So,
all right, boys, I think we're going to wrap it there. We've gone on a long time tonight. Thank you so much for joining me. Russell, anything coming down the pipe from you?
Yeah, I'm going to be starting a weekly soon. We're going to take a shot at it anyway. Something kind of given a five Raptors stats of the week, looking at like some things on either from the week specifically or something on the season, trying to look at some of the more advanced stats, play type statistics, sport view stuff, just trying to basically scouring the stat sheets to find some interesting stuff to as jumping talking points basically. Yeah, and I'm going to try to do it on a weekly or bi-weekly basis and see how it goes.
Cool. Harsh, you have any harsh takes coming down the pipe?
Yep. There'll be a harsh take coming up in 2 days, maybe 2-3 days later this week.
This is my favorite new thing.
The harsh take?
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Oh yeah, I got the preview for the Spurs game too. Maybe I'll write it in Drake lyrics.
Nice.
Cool.
And then what else do I have? What else do I have? Oh, I have the okay, so I have a Raptors 905 thing coming up, a report on that.
Cool.
And another episode of my podcast, Wayward Bounces, will probably be either this week or next week. So yeah, look out for that too.
Podcast superstar Harsh DeVay, man. Keep it up. yeah, I will have the I'll be at the Bucks game on Friday for HQ, so I'll have the recap for that. I'll have the recap for the Sixers game on Sunday as well. I think I'm picking the fun teams to recap here. So I got the Nuggets last week, and I wrote a little thing over the weekend. I don't think it's super out of date because Casey didn't change anything about the starting lineups and maybe some potential options to switch that up. We didn't really get to talk about that today, but read the post. As always, you can find the show on iTunes. You can rate, review, subscribe, all that fun stuff. Share it with some friends. We just passed 5,000 downloads, which like isn't anything. It's like one episode of Raptors Republic's podcast, but like, it's more than I ever expected we'd get. So thank you for anyone who's ever listened or downloaded. You can always follow us on Twitter. At Willy Sean is my Twitter handle. Russell is at Rusty Pedal Bike. And Harsh is at I Am Harsh DeVay. That's all we have for you today. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with another episode of The Headquarters next week.